This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, tonight is the Yahrzeit of the Rambam. Rav Moshe ben Maimon, one of the greatest figures in Judaism. He was born in Cordoba, in Spain, 1135, to his father Maimon, who was a Dayan, very learned, obviously, Dayan, very big, Hamid Hacham. They say that his father's father was the Rimagash. The Rimagash was a student of the Rif, Rav Yitzhak Alfasi. So the Rambam was three generations from the Rif, Rav Yitzhak Alfasi. And that's how we know the Rif was one of the great rabbis who brought the Torah into Europe from Babylon at that time. His rabbi came from Babylon. So probably Rav Hananel, the Rif, the Rimagash, Maimon, Rambam. So about four or five generations before the Torah came into Europe. So as a result of the fall of Cordoba, unfortunately, what happened was the Muslims, they go through phases. So sometimes they're very fierce, sometimes they're very mellow, sometimes they're civilized, sometimes they're uncivilized. Sometimes they're barbarians. They go through phases. Sometimes they get extreme, sometimes they're mellow. So the golden age of Spain was before the time of the Rambam. The golden age of Spain was in the Muslim period, the early Muslim period. And the Jews had a very good time under the Muslims. Until the time of the Rambam, 1135, that's when the Almohads. The Almohads were very fierce Muslims. They said that the Muslims that came before them were not going to have Olam Haba. They lost their Olam Haba. They were too into physical pleasures. So all the caliphs, all the sultans, they were nice, they were handsome, they were great, they brought in the civilization, the Jews worked for them. They're even grand viziers. Shmuel HaNagid, who was the vizier of Spain, who wrote to the back of the Gemara, you'll find Klalei HaTalmud, the general rules of the Talmud, written by a rabbi who was also like Yosef. He was like Yosef. He was like in charge of the empire. The Hadith put him in charge of the empire. So that was the golden age of Spain. Unfortunately, when Rambam was born, soon after he was born, the golden age of Spain came to an end. The Almohads, very fierce Muslims, very right-wing Muslims, came from Morocco, invaded Spain. Amazing. And Cordoba fell to the Almohads, a very fierce sect of Muslims who persecuted the Jews and gave them two choices. Either you convert to Islam or the sword. There are two choices. Convert to Islam with the sword. So Rambam's family, his father Maimon, and all the rest of his relatives, they ran away to Morocco. And that's where they lived, in Morocco. What happened was, in Morocco also, unfortunately, also was taken over by very, very fierce Muslims. And again, all the Jews of Morocco were given two choices: either die or convert. So what happened was, there was a letter, famous letter that one rabbi wrote, says it's better to die than become Muslim. And whoever becomes Muslim, he loses Olam Haba. So a lot of Jews were giving their lives. And the Rambam came along and wrote the letter, saying you don't have to die, you can pretend to be a Muslim. Because Islam is not idolatry, and therefore a Jew can, adopt it temporarily till he finds a safe place, and till he can run away to a better place. So that the Rambam saved many lives. Many Jews were dying, Muslims were killing them, they were refused to become Muslim, but the Jews had to adapt to the times. Unfortunately, there wasn't many places you could run to. You're sort of stuck. A Jew is stuck. Where are you going to go? Europe? The Crusaders? Much worse. So a lot of Jews converted to Islam quietly under the Muslims until...
So who before the Rambam said that you...
We don't know who that name of the rabbi was. But one of the great rabbis of Morocco, apparently. And the Rambam came and demolished his arguments. Islam is not idolatry. You don't have to give your life. You can pretend to be a Muslim. Which Rambam says you cannot do that in Christianity. You cannot pretend to be a Christian. Islam is not idolatry. Christianity is idolatry. Christianity, you believe in more than one God. We believe in a Trinity. it's idolatry. They have pagans there. They have all these shapes and icons and stuff, whereas Muslims don't. For example, today, a Jew is allowed to go into a mosque, whereas a Jew is not allowed to go into a church. So that's what you're going in for. You're going in to observe. Can't go into a church. You're not allowed to go into a church. Suppose you're going sightseeing in Rome. You're not allowed to go into all these chapels and all these places. You want to see the painting, Michelangelo, sorry. You can see it with the paintings, but you can't see, you can see the pictures, but you can't go in. Sistine Chapel or whatever. A lot of Jews don't know these laws. They go in. The sightseeing.
Rambam or
anybody? Rambam says, Asur.
David.
I'm not going. It's Friday. We're talking about Rambam. Rambam says, Asur, to go in a church. And however, we're allowed to go into a mosque. Why is that? The mosque has no pictures, no God. It's only one God. There'll only be one God. It's interesting. The advantage of being a Muslim is it's totally one God. Monotheist. It's totally monotheist. No shapes, no images, no nothing. In fact, they're very, very strict on that. They smashed all the images, right? The Taliban. Oh, they smashed all those statues. And so ISIS, they smashed all the statues. They smashed everything. And they're very, very purist. Muslims are very purist on being monotheist. However, they took out Torah and they changed it. They wrote the Quran. It's out Torah, out of sequence, out of things. They took the whole Torah and they rewrote the Torah. That's the Quran. So that's their big failing. The big strength is the monotheist. The big failing is they took out Torah and ripped it apart. The Quran is a mess of the Torah. The Christians have totally terrible idol worship. Trinity, Godhead, they don't even know. They worship the statues. I've seen people outside the church that go to the statue, kiss the statue, pray to the statue. Right? The South Americans are very much into Mary, what we call Miriam. Right? They're very much into praying to Mary. They pray to Mary, I've seen them. Unbelievable. So they have shapes and images and icons. But their strength is they still have Al-Torah. They call it the Old Testament. And obviously their New Testament replaces it, but they didn't fiddle with our Torah. They kept our Torah. The translation's not very good, but they kept it. So that's how they have a way back to Judaism. You see, Christian priests becoming Jews through the Torah. So they learn the Old Testament. They say, hey, how do we reconcile the Old Testament and the New Testament? We can't reconcile it. And therefore we'll go back to, it's like the founders of America were more into the Old Testament than the New Testament. They're purists. The Quakers were purists. And so anyway, so Rambam and his family spend the next 8 years wandering through Spain and France until they ended up as refugees in Morocco in 1160, in the city of Fez. That's where Al-Fasi came from, originally. That's why it's called Al-Fasi, for the word Fez, from Fez. And 2 years before this, he had already started his commentary on the Mishnah. Can you imagine? Very young age, already started a commentary on the Mishnah. Now, to write a commentary on the Mishnah, you can't write a commentary on the Mishnah unless you know the Gemara. Impossible. Because the Mishnah, what's the commentary on the Mishnah? You have to read the whole Gemara. So you can see from an early age already, he already started learning Mishnah and Gemara. I mean, this man was thorough. He knew the whole Gemara by heart, practically. And he says in his commentary to the Mishnah, he says, please forgive me if I find errors. I wrote most of this commentary by heart. Because he was wandering through different countries. They have books, imagine, you knew by heart. He also wrote a treatise on the Jewish calendar. The Jewish calendar is very, very complicated. Why? Because the Muslims have the lunar calendar, and the Christians have the solar calendar. We have a mixture of both. So the solar calendar is 365 days. The lunar calendar is 354 days, 11 days short. So every year, we're 11 days shorter. So every 2 or 3 years, 7 times every 19 years, there are 7 leap years every 19 years. Between every 2 and 3 years, a leap year with an extra month. Not an extra day, extra month. It's a very, very complex calendar. So Rambam wrote a book, a treatise about that, the Jewish calendar. Amazing. Very complex. You need to know math, you need to know geometry to be able to figure out the Jewish calendar. According to the Muslim authorities, we have no real evidence. It said that the whole family converted to Islam. The Rambam and his family converted to Islam in Morocco. We don't know if this is true, because the Muslims say this about many Jewish scholars. They all converted to Islam. Of course, they wanted to convert to Islam. So sometimes it's just wishful thinking. But we do know that he had to run away again from Morocco. In Fez, he worked on his commentary of the Mishnah and his studied medicine. All his knowledge from medicine came from the great Arab doctors. So the Arabs were very advanced in medicine. They learnt all the books of the Greek doctors, Galen and others, and he learnt medicine from the Muslims. It's interesting, Jews are like bees. Why are we like bees? Imagine, so the Christians had their own culture. The Muslims had their own culture. Who would fit between the two? The Jews. The Jews were like the bees who would take the pollen and scatter the pollen all over the place. They would take learning from the Muslims that can translate to Latin. They take learning from the Christians, translate to Arabic. The Jews were the pollen, really, who spread knowledge in the world. We were the ones who spread knowledge in the world. We were the bridge. The Jews were the bridge between the Muslims and the Christians. We were the bridge. Sometimes it worked. Sometimes they both killed us. So we had a rough time. Sometimes everything would go fine. Sometimes. So the Rambam would learn medicine from the Muslims. And in Fez, one of the leading rabbis of that time, Yehuda ibn Shushan, also a teacher to the Rambam, preferred death to apostasy. So they told him, they called the rabbi of the community, they said, either you convert to Islam or we kill you. And he gave his life. Yehuda ibn Shushan gave his life, killed for the sake of being a Jew. And then they set sail for Egypt. Okay, first the family went to Israel, to Akko, and they lived there for 3 months. And he went to Yerushalayim, it says he went to Yerushalayim, and he went to, his father passed away over there, at Maimon, and his father's buried in Tveria. If you go to Tveria today, you'll see two Kvarim, Rambam and his father, same area, same place. Today they actually built a building over it. Before it was in the open. Now today it's covered. Everything's covered. A beautiful building they made. Still very hot because there's no air conditioning. At least last summer there was no air conditioning. I don't know. They just made like a roof. But they didn't close it in. So now I think they're working on it. Anyway, let's see. I'll go back when I see it. So after 3 months or 5 months they were in Israel. They toured the cities and the sites. Went to the Kotel. And he saw all the devastation. Terrible, devastated. But the Crusades had just started, and they told the Rambam, you're in danger. They're gonna catch you and they'll ransom you off. So get out of here. The Jews told him, go away. The Crusades will catch you like they do all the rabbis. They catch them and they tell the Jews, you want the rabbi back? Pay us money. That was a trick over there. They ransom all the rabbis. So he ran away. He ran away to Egypt. And went to the Jews in Egypt. The Jews in Egypt at that time were mainly Karaites. The Karaites had basically nearly taken over the whole Middle East. All the Jews of the Middle East, nearly all of them became Karaites. If it wasn't for the Rambam, we'd all be Karaites. Hard to imagine, right? If it wasn't for the Rambam made a big fight with the Karaites in a very nice way. He didn't fight physically. He was teaching, through teaching. For 8 years, he lived in Egypt, and he's supported by his brother David. His brother David made a pact, like Issachar and Zvulun, I will look after you financially, you learn, and we'll share the merits. That was the pact with David. And David was a jeweler, dealt with precious stones. And the Rambam, for 8 years, he could prepare his works, write his books, prepare for publication. He was the religious and the leader of the community. In 1168, at the age of 33, he wrote the commentary on the Mishnah. He finished the commentary on the Mishnah, mostly from memory. A year later, his brother David drowned in the Indian Ocean. Tragic. And the Rambam says, I was in bed for a whole year. I was depressed totally. My father died. His wife died. His child died. Now his brother died. He was devastated. He was in bed for a whole year. And not only that, but he had to pay many debts. His brother left a lot of debts. And he had to support his only brother's family now, his brother's wife, his brother's children. And he took it very badly. So he couldn't move for a year. He was just totally devastated. And then he had to seek a livelihood. Who's going to support him? His brother died. The one who supported him died. The community offered him a position. He refused. His method was, you don't take money to learn Torah. You don't take money to be a rabbi. Everything he did was pro bono. Everything for free. He decided to be a doctor. He was 50 years old when he became appointed a doctor to Al-Fazir. Al-Fazir was the Sultan of Egypt. Al-Fazir. He was the deputy to Salah al-Din. Deputy of Salah al-Din. It was during those years when he was a doctor with a heavy burden of his practice. It's amazing. He has a letter to Ibn Tibbon. Ibn Tibbon says, I want to come and see you. I want to come and learn with you. He says, don't bother. He says, I have no time. I'm busy in my practice in Egypt. I go to Fostat, the chief, this is Grand Vizier, and I'm there all day long with him, his courtiers, all their wives, all their children, whoever's sick over there. Come home from the palace, I'm starving. You go home, there's already a line of people waiting for me. Imagine, all the Jews are carried away. Whoever's sick. I beg them, please, can you wait a few minutes while I go and have a quick dinner? This is my dinner. Says, I'm lying down on the couch, so exhausted, and I'm writing prescriptions. Imagine. So even though he's so busy, he wrote letters to every part of the Jewish world. Everyone knew him. He's famous. After his commentary on the Mishnah got out, famous. People started writing letters, questions from all over the world, the Jewish world. He wrote two monumental works. Amazing, amazing. How do you find time to do this? He wrote his the Mishnah Torah at the age of 48, 45. 1180, he wrote the Mishnah Torah, which we have over there. And amazing, amazing, amazing. The Mishnah Torah. The Mishnah Torah is called the Yad Chazakah. That's the other word. Why is it called Yad? Because it has 14 books in it. Yad. Gematria Yad. So it's 14 books. Gematria Yad. It's called Yad HaChazakah. Keep Yad HaChazakah. What's Yad HaShem Yisrael? Hashem took us out of Egypt with a strong hand. 14 books. Yad. He called it the strong hand. That's one of the names for it. The other name is Mishneh Torah. The second Torah. What do you mean, second Torah? He says in introduction, you just have to read the Tanakh and read my book, and that's it. You don't need Mishnah, you don't need Gemara, the whole Torah is in this book. And for this he was taken to task by other rabbis, including the Ra'avad, who writes, this man is full of pride. What a thing to say, you know, you don't need to read anything else, just read my book and you know the whole Torah. So he didn't like that. Plus, he didn't say his sources. Where do you get the source? What's the sources? He didn't write any notes. This I learned from this place, this I learned from this. He didn't write sources. He didn't want to write sources. Why? Because if you write the sources, people could argue with you. They didn't write any sources. So all the commentaries on the Rambam, they spend their time writing the sources of the Rambam. Where do you find this? Where do you find this law? Where do you find this law? In fact, one of the first commentators on the Rambam was the Rabbi Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch. Before he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, he wrote down his commentary on the Rambam called the Kesef Mishnah. Kesef Mishnah on the Mishnah Torah, which is, he writes down the sources of the Rambam. And he asks questions and he answers questions on the Rambam. So he wrote the Mishneh Torah, which is amazing. Mishneh Torah is the whole Torah. From A to Z. Imagine, he learned the whole Mishnah, the whole Gemara, all the other books, and then he puts it all down, because nothing is written in order. The Rambam was the first one to come along. Everything is in order. The laws of Shabbat. You pick up Masechet Shabbat, you'll find it's all haphazard. Okay, it tells you certain chapters, but everything's in there. It's a mess. Gemara is a mess. What does that mean, mess? They go for tangents. The rabbis are, you know, just like in a class. One guy asks a question, they got off a tangent. The other guy asks a question, got off a tangent. So, but the Rambam just kept to the topic in very clear, precise Hebrew. That's also very unique, because his commentary on the Mishnah was written in Arabic. The first book he wrote in Hebrew was the Mishneh Torah. And beautiful Hebrew. It's like the Mishnah, exactly like the cup. He copied Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's clear Hebrew in the Mishnah, and he wrote the book Mishnah Torah, which is much more thorough than just the Mishnah. So there's the Mishnah plus the Gemara, all the other commentaries. And then he had to write a letter to the Jews of Yemen. The Jews of Yemen were terribly afflicted. The Jews of Yemen, similar to what happened in Morocco and in Spain, the Muslims went crazy in Yemen. Muslims are going nuts, just like now. Nothing's changed. You know, it's amazing. All these years later, like, they go through cycles. So when they're moderate, fantastic. When they're wild, they go wild. The Muslims go wild, they go wild. Yemen, in those days, the Muslims went wild. Again, they tell the Jews, either you become Muslim, or we kill you. So a lot of Jews, unfortunately, became Muslim. And then there was a rabbi there who says, if you become Muslim, same thing. You lost your Olam Haba. So they didn't want to do it. A lot of Jews died. And then there was another guy who came along, he says, I'm the Mashiach. So a lot of people, they know what to do. He's the Mashiach, not Mashiach. He wants to convert, not convert. What should we do? So they send a message to the Rambam. And the Rambam writes a letter to Yemen, the Jews of Yemen, called Igeret Teman. Very, very famous letter, Igeret Teman. So number one is, he went to the vizier of Egypt, and he argued with him and told him to pressure the caliph of Yemen to make things easier for the Jews, not to convert the Jews by the sword. So that's number one. He's very, very beneficial. He had tremendous contacts, political contact. He was their doctor. So he had the political contacts to stop the persecution of the Jews of Yemen. Amazing. And number two, he wrote a letter to the Jews of Yemen and telling them that you can convert to Islam. It's not the worst thing. Just get out of it as soon as you can. It's not considered idolatry, and therefore you don't have to give your life. So he calmed them down, and he reinforced their belief in God. And he said, this guy's a false messiah, don't believe in him. And so that's very important. The Igeret Teman, the book of the right letter to Teman, the Jews of Yemen. Now, he gets problems. The book he wrote, the Mishneh Torah, at the end of Hilchot Teshuvah, he writes over there about Olam Haba. He writes about the world to come. We talked about it last Shabbat. What is the world to come? So Rambam over there has a whole section about the world to come. But over there, he doesn't talk about Tiyat HaMetim. Does not mention revival of the dead. So a lot of rabbis start attacking him. Huh? See, Rambam doesn't believe in the revival of the dead. He does not believe in Tikkat HaMetim. So he had to write another little book, pamphlet, leaflet, called Ma'amar Tikkat HaMetim. I do believe in Tikkat HaMetim. There will be a stage in history when Mashiach comes called Tikkat HaMetim. All the Jews will revive and whatever. So then he had to write a book called Tikkat HaMetim because they denied it. They told him, they said he denied Tiyat HaMetim. So he wrote a book, Tiyat HaMetim. And lastly, I just want to finish off. Lastly, he wrote was the Moreh Nevuchim. Moreh Nevuchim is the guide to the perplexed. We're talking about the perplexed Jews. We're talking about the Jews who were advanced intellectuals in math and physics and science, whatever they had in those days, and they were messed up. They didn't know how to reconcile the Torah with science. So that's what he did. He tried to reconcile the Torah with science and philosophy. And Aristotle, and that caused him even more problems. Because he quotes Aristotle. The Jews in France went ballistic. What are you, quoting a non-Jew, Aristotle? Chutzpah, you shouldn't quote any non-Jews. And they put the Rambam al-Kherem, and they burnt his books, and eventually they did Teshuvah. Eventually they did Teshuvah. Leading them was Rabbi Yonah of Gerona, who wrote the Shari Teshuvah. He wrote the Shari Teshuvah because he was writing about doing teshuvah for what he did to the Rambam. Baruch Adonai Leolam. Amen. Amen.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.